Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast once again on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer. Sunday nighter it is, recapping Alabama's 37-20 home victory over the rival Tennessee Volunteers. Travis, big game for Alabama. Lots of big plays to dive into here. Want to tell our viewers and listeners to check out Ryer on YouTube. Fantastic channel. Lots of great content there, including right here on Talking Tide twice weekly during the football season. And, of course, we always wrap up Alabama's most recent game with the Sunday nighter. And, Travis, so much to dive into here with Alabama getting the job done with some huge plays. Once again, kind of in that middle eight, right, winning and making a big difference in that neighborhood.
They really did. And complimentary football, when Alabama had opportunities and chances to answer Tennessee throughout the game, it took advantage of those, whether it was getting the three and out to start the game and then going down the field and getting into the end zone to get the early 7-0 lead, or 7-7 game. They're able to get the safety there on the intentional grounding and really paid that off when they get the possession after the safety, go down and make it a 9-point game. Just felt like throughout the night, Alabama, whenever Tennessee made a surge or had a surge, Alabama, whether it was offensively, defensively, had the answer.
Yeah, quick start for Alabama. Sure, we can start there. The defense forces a punt on Tennessee's first possession. Alabama goes, I believe, 91 yards for a touchdown drive on its opening possession. So a 7-0 lead there to kind of set things up. And then, as you noted, later in the game, you've not only got the safety that was caused by Yanze Pierre, who had a monster game. We'll get into that a little bit later. But safety turns it for sure. And then Alabama cashes in for 7 on the exchange there. And then, of course, the huge play to close out the first half, Travis, with Xavien Brown picking off Joey Aguilar, taking it the distance, 99 yards for a touchdown. And really that whole sequence there, I think, is kind of worth diving into a little bit, Travis. It was a play. You know what it reminded me of? And this is a throwback, but you and I were sitting together for this one in Starkville, I believe. Yep. Right before the half, John Parker Wilson threw a big pick to Mississippi State in the end zone. And it was a situation where Alabama was out of timeouts. Mississippi State knew they had to throw. They go play action. They don't fool anybody. Interception. And was that 08?
That was 07. And okay. I think that was part of the 0 for November.
There you go. That's right, because they lost that game. Yeah, yeah.
Nick Saban, Sylvester Croom. Got a W. Yeah. Over Nick Saban. That was the
kind of similar, November. Right?
Yeah, the November not to remember. I call that one in 2007. It was. You're right. That's a great call. I don't know if a lot of the viewers appreciate it, but I think it's I think it's on the money.
I mean, there is no doubt Tennessee was going to throw. Mm-hmm. I talked to a couple of the Tennessee writers at halftime who were calling it the worst play call of Heupel's career at Tennessee. And they were saying there was no chance they were going to kick a field goal on fourth down. If they throw incomplete there, they really felt like Heupel was going to go for it on fourth down. I'm not nearly as far as you with my second watch. And for our listeners and viewers, one of the great pieces of content on Ryer on YouTube is Travis's second watch, which is a breakdown of some key plays in the Alabama game that he gets done on Sundays following the game. I'm only about a quarter of the way through my second watch. I've watched the first half of the defense so far. I got a ways to go. But the play before Xavien Brown's interception, Travis, I thought obviously was key. Tennessee was on the 2-yard line. Mm-hmm. They get a 1-yard run to Deshaun Bishop. Tim Keenan did a nice job right there, kind of standing up a double team. It wasn't a pure double team because it was more like a combo block, but he stood his ground and didn't get any credit for the tackle. But Bishop kind of ran into the back of the guard who was trying to move Keenan off the line of scrimmage and could not do it. And as a result, Tennessee ends up in that third and goal situation out of timeouts. And Xavien Brown takes that return 99 yards and almost got clipped at the heels at about the 30-yard line. Said he went with a little hesitation move around the 40 and then hit the jets and high-stepped right through that swipe at the heels.
He did. You know, I thought Tennessee sort of slow-played that, and I get it. You know, you're trying to take the clock there in addition to getting into the end zone. I think sometimes, though, teams' offenses – forget the primary objective, which is to, you know, actually score there. You know, I don't care if I score with 25 seconds or 1 second. You know, in that situation, I just want to make sure I get into the end zone. And you have to give Alabama's offense some credit for even that, even though it was, you know, still a manageable game at 16-7. Heupel's an offensive guy, and he's worried about the other team's offense. They're trying to take the clock there, take every second. I mean, you know, Alabama was getting the ball to start the third quarter. So if you got in with 30 seconds, it probably wasn't going to change Alabama's approach on the ensuing possession all that much, knowing that they were getting the ball anyway to start the second half. Now, you know, we've seen in some games this year where Alabama in that situation, Vanderbilt, you know, they got the football there late in the first half and went down and got in the end zone for a big touchdown. There was a minute 33 left, though, as I recall, in that situation, right. Not 25 or 30 seconds. Right. And also Vanderbilt was getting the ball coming out, I believe, to start the third quarter. So a totally different scenario. No problem with the call as far as Tennessee throwing the football there. But to the point that you and so many others have made about the run game being out of the window, if you're going to throw it there, put people on the field who you want to throw it to.
Right.
I mean, in that tight formation, a run formation, when you can't run,
yeah,
and you got all these guys, these multiple tight ends, there was one guy on the field for the play that you felt like Tennessee would actually want to throw the ball to, and that's who they threw it to. And that had to help Alabama too, in terms of Miles Kitzelman. You can try to hide him at fullback, whatever you want to do, but you're thinking 87 in that situation, yeah, because literally no one else in that formation was a real threat as a receiver, even, you know,
right.
So formationally, personnel wise, how you packaged it, it made it easier, I think, on Alabama. Still a great play by Xavien Brown, not just to pick the pass off, but then to turn that, you talk about 14 point swings that really, really hit hard. That was one for sure.
I'll tell you what too, Travis, I have not yet done the math on this. I'm going to do the math because I think it'll be a hell of a note. But if you add up all the touchdown drives Alabama's had in the last 2 minutes of the first half this season, I think there's been a field goal or two in that stretch too, plus Xavien Brown's big play. I think Alabama's probably scored somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 points in the last 2 minutes of the first half this season.
Well, do the opening possession for Alabama in every game and then do the last possession of the first half in every game. And it would probably, your point is right on about that. It does seem that way. But, boy, they on script are devastatingly effective too. Now, look, they did it again against Tennessee, but it really took a great individual effort by Ty Simpson on that third and long, you know, from his own end zone where he's getting heat and he's able to sort of position himself, you know, elude pressure, keep his eyes up, come down to Josh Cuevas, and then Cuevas after the catch. I mean, Jeremy Bernard, they've got some guys. It's not just one or two guys either. They got three or four guys after the catch, including Cuevas at the tight end spot, that are really, really good. Their running backs are probably the lowest on that totem pole after the catch. Their wide receivers, though, and their tight ends are really, really good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I asked Simpson after the game about two throws in particular. One was that one. You know, he's sitting on a third and 13 from his own six to open the game. Mm-hmm. Like you said, got away from some pressure, stayed calm, finds Cuevas pretty wide open in the middle of the field. And the other one, first and 10 from his own one in the second half on that 99-yard drive, hitting Ryan Williams to get the ball out to, I think, about the 15-yard line, give him some breathing room. Those were both huge throws in the game.
I like that because I felt like at that point in the game, it was pedal to the metal time for the offense. All the sort of trying to control the game and, you know, make sure you stay committed enough to the run, all that. It, to me, that was going out the window, it felt like. You needed to just go get points, you know. And, you know, they had tried to be patient with the run. They had some first and 10 runs followed by some second and long runs that just didn't put them in a good place to convert thirds. But you're right. They came out on that start of that 99-yard drive, and they came out in the gun with the pistol, which you can still run the ball effectively enough in terms of direct runs. But they basically said, Ryan Grubb basically said, this is who we are. This is what we do best, and went with it. And you can see the confidence that Grubb and Ty Simpson had in being able to do that.
Yeah, Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams are – when Williams is healthy and is right, it's a devastating wide receiver combination, those two guys, no doubt about it. Cuevas in the middle of the field gives Simpson obviously a really nice third option in the passing game. By the way, Bernard and Williams blocked their asses off too in this game. I thought those two did a nice job in that regard. So, you know, all in all, the passing offense – was sharp, and let's go ahead and pivot from there to talk about pass protection for Alabama. Right, no sacks on Ty Simpson. I thought it was Alabama's best pass protection game since Georgia, maybe even including Georgia, and they were exceptional at Georgia with pass protection wise. Really a good job, especially given the fact that Tennessee came in leading the league in sacks with 26. And on the flip side, Alabama comes into the game with only 9 sacks all year. Joey Aguilar hadn't been sacked hardly at all season by Tennessee opponents. UT had only given up 4 sacks all year going into this game. They give up 4 more to Alabama's pass rush. So Alabama completely flipped the tables in terms of what we should have expected on paper, pass rush-wise, on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, boy, and you said it earlier, Yanze Pierre, who I've since dubbed as the Bala from Eufaula. Man, what a game. And, you know, we could see this coming. We talked about Yanze Pierre as an ascending player. And when Quay Rousseau went out, you know, a lot of concern. And there's still concern from that perspective, because more so if something happens to Pierre now, where are you at the Wolf position? Not that Quay isn't a top of the depth chart kind of guy. You would love to have both those guys right now.
Right.
In some dime and some pass rush or rabbits or whatever it used to be called situations. But boy, Pierre is just been a revelation in a lot of ways, not just in the pass rush either. I mean, he is a 3-down player at that edge position. And, you know, to your point, the flipping of the script where pass rush and sacks and those things were concerned. Now, Ty did have the fumble from the pocket. Yeah. That wasn't a strip sack. You know, that was just misfortune about as much as anything else. He's trying to throw the football, comes into contact with Caden Proctor, ball comes out. And then also he had one or two where he had to move up into the pocket. That's one of the things I'll say for Ty Simpson. Since Florida State, the sack numbers are good. Don't get me wrong. And I think protection has been a lot better, and it's been good for the most part, but he does things to help his protection a lot more than he did in that Florida State game.
He'll step up. He's not peeling out the backside of the pocket every time, like we saw him trying to do against Florida State. He's stepping up more. He's seeing more. He's looking for second and third reads a little bit more. It's like he's developing and improving seemingly on a pretty much a weekly basis. And what about this, Travis? Now, according to Vegas Man, the odds-on front runner for the Heisman Trophy is Ty Simpson, for goodness sakes.
Why not? I mean, Carson Beck threw 4 picks on Friday night, you know, in a home loss to Louisville. So Ty Simpson might as well be up there. I think Diego Pavia got himself back into it probably over the weekend with that win over LSU. You look at schedules for teams like Vanderbilt, Alabama, still some opportunities in that league in the Southeastern Conference. You know, I was thinking about this today, too. It's a little bit off the beaten path of where we're at. In the old division days, if Alabama was in the old SEC East, they'd pretty much have the division wrapped. Because look at their conference wins right now.
Right.
Right? I mean, you're talking about Georgia. You're talking about Vanderbilt.
Tennessee.
Missouri. You know, that's like Steve Spurrier back in the 90s already having it wrapped up in mid-October. And then you got South Carolina coming up still. It's like two different divisional schedules from the division days when you had, you know, Alabama right now is working through the SEC East. Mm-hmm. We'll finish that up with South Carolina. And then November is going to be all about what used to be the West or what would be the West with Oklahoma in all likelihood being a part of that.
Yeah, no doubt. It's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that, but they're blazing through the East. And as we know, Travis, Florida isn't the monster of the East that they once were. Billy Napier, the second SEC coach to lose a job this year, he goes out. Strickland seen enough after a victory over Mississippi State, of all things. It was reported earlier in the week that he was going to be gone, win or lose. And that sounded like reporting out over its skis to me, because you don't often see coaches get canned after a win, but it happened.
It did happen. There's still a Billy that's the head coach at Florida. It's just Billy Gonzalez.
That's right. Yeah.
Instead of Billy Napier. You know, I was kind of hoping that Florida would just go down to the basement and bring Spurrier up, you know, because he's down there. Yeah. You know, he's got that office now down there in the bowels of the facility or wherever it is on campus. But
Emeritus.
Emeritus head coach. That'd be a lot more fun than what we're going to get out of Florida over this back half of the season. Billy Napier, though, getting $21 million to go away. And by the way, no offset.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Regardless of whether or not when he gets another job, where he gets another job, he's getting his money from the
game. That might tell you a little bit about why there was more patience exercised
Scott Strickland
last year.
Guys.
Yeah.
Because he agreed to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hired him and agreed to the language, the AD. He probably didn't like that real good.
No. Back to Alabama, Tennessee, though, Travis. I want to talk about the respective running games in this one. Probably if the UA coaching staff comes out of this game with concerns. It would be run stopping on Kane Womack's charges. Obviously, Tennessee's running game gashed Alabama quite a bit with the backs. And Alabama's running game was lacking, at least when you're talking about running back production. Now, Daniel Hill did give them a boost in the fourth quarter for the second game in a row. Jam Miller couldn't get anywhere. But a lot of Alabama, if you look at the total numbers on Alabama's rush, Alabama ran 32 times for net 120, right? But you had Jeremy Bernard pick up 49 of that. You had Ryan Williams pick up 16 of that. So when it comes to production from the backs, it's been pretty rough sledding, although I do think we might see Daniel Hill coming in a little bit earlier in games down the stretch.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty obvious Jam wasn't himself. And you know what? I'm going to give the guy a little grace because he was in concussion protocol early in the week, you know, so probably even more so than the Georgia game when he was coming off the shoulder collarbone deal in his first game.
Right.
And he was obviously still trying to get his legs under him a little bit in his first appearance, you know, coming out of concussion protocol. I'm not going to get on Jam too much, but yeah, Daniel Hill was what they needed him to be. And especially I just want to see Daniel Hill run more to his size. I don't need to see Daniel Hill leaving his feet, you know, trying to hurdle guys at 240.
Right.
I need to see him get that pad level where it needs to be. And kind of like he ended up doing a couple of times, you know, finishing with power.
Right.
And the toss sweep, I thought that was kind of the answer for the run game involving the backs. You know, once they started tossing it and getting more to the perimeter, because the inside run game wasn't happening. It was a little frustrating because, as I said earlier, and I talked about this on X during the game, they were patient and Grubb was trying to stay with it and they were getting nothing on early downs and they were putting themselves in some third and tens. you know, first down, okay, you want to run it, or even and or second down, first or second down, if you want to run, okay. But they were, it felt like wasting some plays with the run game. Now, all's well that ends well. As you said, though, Jeremy Bernard, I don't even really consider him a wide receiver anymore. He's like a utility player because they do give it to him. I mean, they line him up in the backfield, not just for window dressing. I mean, they'll give him the football. And it feels like more and more that he does that, he is taking on some running back attributes like patience and pressing the hole and, you know, giving things a chance to set up, and he's got some power to him too. I mean, he runs through a lot of contact himself.
No doubt about it. Not to your point about Miller, no doubt coming off a concussion, he deserves some grace. My critique of the running game, more about the offensive line. I didn't see any room for Jam Miller. I don't know that any back would have gotten a lot of yards in that situation. Again, I still got to go through my second watch of the offense. I'm halfway through the defense right now, but just to my eye from the press box, I didn't think they blocked it up front very well at all, especially when they were trying to go between the tackles with the running game. Flip side, Deshaun Bishop, Travis, 14 for 123 on the ground for Tennessee. UT running game, if anything, kept them in it. And I really look, Alabama maintained 2-score leads, 3-score leads. For a good chunk of this game. So it's not like Tennessee was constantly nipping at Alabama's heels. But if anything looked like it was going to keep Tennessee in it, it was that they could get chunks, 8 yards, 12 yards or more with that running game.
They could. And even at 23-7, you didn't figure the game was out of hand enough for Tennessee to just totally get away from the run game, which is what you would have liked if you're Alabama. And so Tennessee stuck with it. And really at the end of the second quarter, you know, they had some sample size at that point on that last possession that went for the pick six. Ultimately, that's really last 4 or 5 minutes of the second quarter, you started to see the Tennessee run game kick in. Alabama did a pretty good job early. Later in the second quarter, you start to see more and more chunks. And then fundamentally, Alabama, tackling-wise, I thought was worse than they were in terms of fits. I felt like they had people in position a lot of times, like the touchdown run by Deshaun. I mean, you've got a safety and a linebacker right there, and they almost step on each other on the cutback. You got a backside corner coming across. He gets, you know, crossed up in Dejon Lee. It goes back to, again, if you fit it right, you should be able to keep these runs to maximums of 10, 15 yards. The problem continues to be that a couple of times a game, these things go for 40-plus, Chase.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. It's an area that Alabama is going to need to get shored up. Fortunately for the Crimson Tide, they're going up next against an offensive line that's a mess right now at South Carolina, and we'll get into that a little bit more in the midweek podcast as we preview the Alabama upcoming trip to Williams-Brice Stadium. But no doubt about it, it's an area where Alabama continues to need to try to improve. I think Daniel Hill's emergence, he's been effective the last couple of weeks with this fourth quarter action, and obviously the Miller concussion against Missouri kind of forced that last week. A little bit more voluntary, I think, this week for Hill to see some action. But I'd like to see Daniel Hill get involved in or earlier in games for Alabama. I think he could give them a similar boost a little sooner than the last 4 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a good recipe as long as Jam is healthy enough to continue to open games with Jam Miller and see where it takes you there. But I'm sure they scripted in a way that they're going to get Daniel Hill involved more. And I still think there's a place for Kevin Riley in this offense too, but it could be week to week, matchup to matchup as far as he is concerned. But definitely when it comes time for 4 minute offense and closing out games, it would be tremendous to have that back with those physical attributes that Hill has to help you, you know, finish defenses, win the game, 4 minute offense, stay out there on offense and finish games like that.
Mm-hmm. want to ask your thoughts about Alabama's pass defense as well, Travis. I thought they're pretty strong back there working against Joey Aguilar. Chris Brazell, who is the guy in terms of wide receivers at Tennessee, came into the game with 7 touchdown catches on the year. You can't say he was quiet because he did catch 7 balls, but they didn't hit him vertically deep like they were able to do against Georgia. Aguilar did hit him early over the middle for a big first down. But for the most part, I thought keeping him quiet, at least in terms of being a deep ball option, was a factor in this game for Alabama's defense.
Yeah, you didn't get Jalen Hyatt-ed like you did in Knoxville, right? Yeah. On the switch releases and just busting coverages between the corners and the safety. So you're right. That was a bright spot. And that's certainly a big part of what Tennessee wants to do in its passing game in general. And they want to run the football, and then hit you over the top. And he did draw the one PI on Damani in the end zone. That was pretty easy to see. So, you know, a 6'5 guy like that, third downs, and then in the red zone, probably going to make an impact. I thought he did that a couple of times. I think it's pretty clear that Aguilar has a lot of confidence in him. You know, the one third down throw he made over the middle, Brazel goes up and makes a heck of a catch on. I think that's the play you're talking about. But all in all, Matthews, Brazel, and Staley didn't beat you. You know, you gave up the red zone touchdown to Staley there. I thought, you know, with the amount of time that Aguilar had to work on that play, it was probably going to be hard to cover for that long. Deshaun Jones was in coverage on that play. But all in all, I thought it was a good enough job. What you look at with Tennessee, going back to Hendon Hooker in this offense, is yards per attempt, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have been traditionally, when they're right, they're going to be 10, 11 yards per attempt.
Right.
And I think they were under 7 last night. So you can win with that, right?
No doubt about it. All right. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, I want to ask our listeners and viewers to contribute to Parker Covers Alabama, 501c3 nonprofit supporting. Ah, there we go. Look at the website there. Awesome. Supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents, ParkerCoversAlabama.com is the place to do it. Mike was a friend of Travis's, friend of mine. We lost him earlier this year and was really quite an inspiration. Founded Crimson Cover, which is a WVUA television show that I've been doing for the past 15 years now, and unfortunately no longer with Mike, but he still inspires it every single week. Again, that's Parker Covers Alabama at ParkerCoversAlabama.com. All right, moving on, the Talking Tide podcast. Travis, let's jump in and take a look around the SEC this week. Where to begin? A couple of shootouts, right? Georgia takes care of business against Ole Miss, 43-35, high-scoring game. Georgia finally finds some defense late after Ole Miss just wore out that Georgia defense really for the first 3 quarters. A&M wins a shootout, 45-42. With Arkansas, some wild scores and finishes. And how about Vanderbilt getting it done at home against LSU, 31-24? We can go in a lot of directions here.
Yeah, I was wrong on Vanderbilt LSU. I thought LSU would win that game, but that's a rough one for LSU, kind of like it was for Alabama last year in Nashville, because it wasn't a fluke. Vanderbilt was just the better football team Saturday in Nashville. And where that hurts you if you're an LSU fan is that it starts up front, and with the way Vanderbilt ran the football, I know Diego does Diego things, but the way Vanderbilt finished off LSU in that game is brutal for LSU. What about Bobby Petrino at Arkansas? You mentioned it. 45-42, Texas A&M gets by Arkansas in Fayetteville. But with each of these better jobs than Arkansas that opens up, like Florida here in the last 12, 20 hours, you know, like Penn State before it, like other jobs that we're kind of anticipating opening up, does it just make more and more sense for Arkansas to just go with Bobby Petrino part two. You know, look, I understand the shameful exit he had the first time around, but you know what? They didn't fire Bobby for not winning football games.
No.
And relative to the pool that is probably going to be out there, and it's still a loss, but 3-point loss at Tennessee the week before, 3-point loss, you know, to Texas A&M. And you can say, well, that's what they were doing with Sam Pittman. Well, I think without Bobby Petrino dialing up the offense for Sam Pittman, those games wouldn't have been as competitive.
Now, I agree. I think Petrino probably ought to be the guy for Arkansas. And look, the challenge for Petrino is going to be no different than any other coach they can bring in. And that is, you better rally the NIL troops over there because they're lagging in NIL over there because you need some money to pay some defensive players. You need to bring, you know. Now, when Bobby Petrino had it rolling at Arkansas in that 2010-11 range, whatever it was, offense wasn't great then either, but they had more athletes. And at that time, obviously, that was pre-NIL, so recruiting was a completely different ball game. Bobby's going to score points. Bobby's going to have kids in there on the offensive side of the ball that are going to light up the scoreboard regardless. But you better be able to fork over some money for a pass rusher and a couple of corners and some things they desperately need over there on the other side of the ball, Travis. If they can do that at Arkansas, then Petrino could be just what the doctor ordered. But it's a tall task.
Yeah, Ed chiming in here in the show chat, and we appreciate everyone keeping that lively on a Sunday night live with us. Says Petrino will be 65 in March. How old was Nick Saban, you know, when he was winning his fourth or fifth national championships at Alabama? And that's not to say Petrino and Arkansas have that sort of ceiling together moving forward. But I agree with you from the standpoint of, yes, there are all these limitations and concerns with that job at Arkansas. But you know who knows all those better than anybody else?
Petrino. Yeah.
Bobby Petrino.
Yeah. No doubt about it. We'll see what happens with the Hogs. At Georgia final over Ole Miss, Travis, caught my eye for this reason. 43-35, your final score. Mm-hmm. For a couple of days last week, Georgia was laying 7.5. For a couple days, they were laying 8. And for a couple days, they were laying 8.5. And so that one could have tilted in either direction, just depended on when you hopped on the train. You either won or lost by half a point, or you pushed. That's how tight that was.
You know, Ole Miss was like the one dog at the dog track, you know, when Rusty comes around and that one dog gets out on that rail and it's just, you know, 3/4 through the race, or, you know, you're thinking, man, that one dog's just going to go wire to wire. But then here comes that 7 or 8 dog, you know, as we get close to the home stretch. And, well, you could kind of see it. That's tough, though, for Ole Miss, because it wasn't just that it was bells and whistles or flash or any of that. I mean, Ole Miss for three quarters and change just looked better than Georgia in just about every facet of the football game. But give Georgia a lot of credit. I've said it before. I said it after the Georgia win over Tennessee. I said, that's a culture win. Mm-hmm. In the post game yesterday, I heard Kirby use that exact wording, that he told his team that yesterday was a culture win. And that's about all you can draw it up to, because that, and also, you know, I think we had talked about Trinidad Chambliss and how this would be a different deal for him. Right. And I thought we also saw from him the comfort. He was comfortable. He was comfortable at Sanford Stadium for 3 quarters. Mm-hmm. And then in the 4th quarter, when it's closing time in a pit like that against a team like that, it's a little bit different deal. But I thought Chambliss was really good for the most part. But, boy, that Ole Miss offense in the 4th quarter stymied, to say the least.
Speaking of bad offenses, Travis, Texas 16-13 nipping of Kentucky in overtime. The Longhorns, Travis, 177 yards of total offense in a game that went to OT. They win it by 3. Here's my question to you. There are now three, and we've talked about all of them here just in the last few minutes. There are now three two-loss teams in the league: Texas, LSU, Tennessee. Of those three who have their problems, right? Tennessee's got defensive problems. LSU and Texas have offensive problems. Of those three, who do you think has the best shot to flip it around, win, put a win streak together, and maybe make a run at a CFP spot?
Before yesterday, I would have said LSU because I would have felt like I could trust that defense and I could trust Blake Baker. But after watching that yesterday, I'm wondering if LSU isn't on the verge of a come apart here.
Right.
Yeah. As we get closer to November and into November. So I don't know. Texas right now is
they're a mess.
They thought they had figured some things out. And if it wasn't for their punt return game, I don't know if they'd have won their last two games. They got a big one against Oklahoma. They got a couple of them against Kentucky. And they just they can't run the football either. And their offensive line is maybe the worst in the SEC. I know there's a couple up there where fan bases would probably argue, no, ours is worse. Maybe maybe South Auburn, Carolina. South Carolina. But boy, you can talk about Sark and his script and all that, but if you can't block and you know, you're not able to run the football and achieve some semblance of balance, it's going to be tough. And Kentucky, you know, look, that's never a fun place to go. I know it's not up there with Death Valley and Jordan-Hare and, you know, these other places around the league, but it just seems like good teams or teams that should win pretty decisively up there struggle to do so, historically anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, it's a wrap for us, right, Travis?
I think we're good. Good bread. Yeah.
We'll close it out right here on the Talking Tide podcast. Want to thank our viewers and listeners. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday night when we reconvene and preview Alabama's upcoming road game at South Carolina. It's going to be a drive and not a flight for yours truly. Not looking forward to losing that time zone hour. Not looking forward to that haul to
I-20, Columbia. Baby. I-20.
Oh, yeah. There's just not a convenient way to fly in there, really. You know, I mean, forget it.
Not worth it.
No. So, anyway, gassing up that rental car. Gassing it up.
Cola, baby. Cola.
Yeah. So, anyway, Wednesday night, we will be back here on the Ryer on YouTube channel taking a look at Alabama's next challenge, the South Carolina Gamecocks. Until then, for Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread Sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll see you next time.